Merhaba ve hoş geldiniz. Hello and welcome to another edition of our Talking Round North Cyprus podcast. I'm Sarah Palmer.
And I'm Roger Barra. Good to be with you again. Would you believe for the 83rd time?
Goodness me. Anyway, in a short while, we'll be introducing you to author Kerry Lee Delport, who is just a few months into her new life in the TRNC. We'll find out why she's here or there, all about her first published novel, After Luke, and about her passion surrounding healing crystals. But just before that, Rog, more dust where you are, I gather?
Yes, we're having frequent episodes of dust transfer from the arid and partly arid regions, well, basically the deserts of North Africa and the Middle East. And if I can give you some idea, here in Karşıyaka, I'm looking out of my office window at the mountains, which are very close, as you know, this side, and I can barely see them because of the dust in the air. I played bowls last night, and at every end, you really had to totally clean the bowls. Because they were just covered in dust coming off the surface. So, you know, and the greens are, you know, cleaned regularly as they have to be. But it's just so dusty at the moment. So dusty, in fact, I didn't go for my normal Saturday morning run because, frankly, it's quite uncomfortable. The dust gets up your nose, in your eyes, sticks in your throat. And it's it should go this weekend, we're hoping. But at the moment, yeah, dusty.
Wow, because it's very, very fine, isn't it? It's that very fine sort of sandy dust. So hopefully, I mean, if you get a bit of rain, but I don't know if you're going to get much rain at the moment. So we here in England, though, we're talking about our weather. I mean, it's really very quite warm at the moment, which is nice. I mean, it's only 8 o'clock in the morning with me and it's already 13 degrees. I know that's cool for you, 13 degrees, but it's going to get nice. But we had a geometric storm and people are posting all over Twitter and Facebook about the Northern Lights. Been absolutely fantastic. As far south as Jersey, people have been posting pictures of the Northern Lights because of this amazing geometric storm that's been happening. So I went to bed early last night, so I didn't see it. But anyway, I'm going to stay up a little bit later tonight and see if I can see it. So, yeah, the weather is doing strange things at the moment, isn't it? With Sahara sand in Cyprus and the Northern Lights being seen as far as south as Jersey. Also, let's talk about some other things. I understand the president, Ersin Tata, has met with the UN Secretary General's personal envoy about the Cyprus problem. That seems a bit deja vu. Any point to that?
Well, she wanted to find out if there was any basis to start negotiations again, basically. I'll give you her name. Well, I can barely pronounce it. Maria Angela Holguin Chuela. And as I say, her mission is to explore whether there is any common ground for official negotiations to start again between the Turkish and Greek Cypriots. And of course, President Tata's made it absolutely clear right from when he was first elected, a two-state solution is all he's interested in. And there's absolutely no point going down any other ground because it hasn't worked for so many years. So he said, you know, sitting at the table doesn't solve anything. We have to change the mentality. So basically, he's letting her, the Cyprus envoy, for the UN Secretary General, where North Cyprus actually officially stands on this, and he's not prepared to waste, as he calls it, any more time on pointless round-the-table negotiations unless there is a complete change of mind on the Greek and indeed the UN's attitude to what is happening in Cyprus. So basically, he's standing firm, and as you say, whether it will make any difference or not, we'll have to wait and see.
But at least they've got a standpoint now. I mean, the Turkish Cypriots over time have sort of, yes, okay, we can try that. Yes, okay, let's talk about this. Let's try this. But, you know, and each time the Greeks have said no, thanks, no, thanks, walked away. So at least everybody knows where everybody stands. I think that's the main thing. And once you know that, that's a sort of good negotiating point. Also, inflation. Is that right? It's a whopping 100% in the TRNC. So what's the lira at the moment? Do you happen to know?
Well, the lira is still just over 40, but the inflation rate is 95.6%. Wow. So consumer prices of goods and services over here have risen by an average of 23% just since the start of this year. And of course, we're only in May. Loads of things have gone up. Entertainment and culture, restaurants and hotels, telecommunications, alcohol, beverages, sadly, have gone up. Tobacco. In fact, I think the only thing that's gone down, some foods and non-alcoholic beverages, which fell by a measly 2%.
Oh, hardly worth giving up wine for then, Rog.
Well, absolutely not. I mean, if you eat cucumbers, lettuce and fresh broad beans, they have gone down the most, over 50%. But really, it's getting even more difficult for local people to just manage. It's difficult. And there's no signs, Sarah, that it's going to ease up anytime soon.
As you say, very difficult for local people who are paid in teller. I know a lot of business is done in US dollars and pounds and euros and things, but it's not good for the local people.
And if you've got contact lenses, I must just tell you this one, the contact lens care products, the prices have gone up nearly 250%.
And
that is eye-watering, as it says in Cyprus today.
Absolutely. I guess that's import duties and things like that as well. But that seems a strange thing to have risen so far. Right. Let's get away from macroeconomics and onto our special guest. And a delightful one she is as well. Kerrilee Delport is a published author who's now moved to the TRNC. In fact, we found out during our conversation, he literally lives about 5 minutes away from you, Roger, doesn't she, in Kashiaki?
Yep.
So I know you had a look over your fence to make sure she wasn't your neighbour, but she's literally sort of down the road from you. Anyway, we caught up with her earlier this week. And naturally, our first question, and we wanted to know how she came to be living in North Cyprus.
Well, my brother bought a house out here, it was probably about 10 years ago now. And so we came out on holiday as a family. So we came from the UK. My brother lived in Dubai at the time. So it was then it was a holiday home, but it was always with the intention of them moving out here, you know, when once they retired. So, yeah, they would come over on holiday from Dubai. We would come over from the UK and we just fell in love with it. It's just we just love the slower paced lifestyle, obviously the weather. So, yeah, we just absolutely loved it. And yeah, we always sort of hoped that we'd be able to make it out here one day because my mum and dad have come as well. So we wanted to all be together as a family because we've all kind of lived away from home for a long time. So it's nice to finally all be together. But yeah, it was just we just fell in love with it. Really, that was kind of the main drawing point for us.
Of course, holidaying here and actually living here are two very different things. Now, you've only been here a few months, really, haven't you? How are you finding the reality compared to coming here on holiday?
The funny thing is my husband and I were just chatting about this yesterday because, as you say, it is very, very different when you holiday compared to living out here. But I mean, I think for us personally, on the whole, we haven't really found too many differences. Obviously, there's little things, you know, like my husband and I were saying yesterday about the language barrier. You don't really notice it as much when you're on holiday because, of course, you know, restaurants or, you know, sort of places that you go to, bars, things like that, everybody speaks English. But then when you need to sort of, you know, if you need a doctor's appointment or a dentist appointment or something like that, then it can be a bit tricky with the language barrier. But at least, you know, with modern technology, at least we've got Google Translate and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, and you know, like you're saying about power cuts and things like that. But, you know, generally, we've really enjoyed it. And yeah, we've only been here 5 months. So maybe it's a bit too soon to sort of, you know, gauge it yet. But yeah, there's of course a couple of differences and things like that. But I think, you know, sort of having now lived in, this is the third country I've lived in, there's pros and cons to every country. And you always get, you know, goods and bads. And you always have little tweaks and things that you have to adjust to as well when you move to a different country. So but so far, touch wood, so far, so good.
I think that's what people find, isn't it, that if you've lived in different places. And that, I think that's what I find fascinating about people ending up in the TRNC. Lots of people have done lots of travelling, possibly lived in lots of different places. And they sort of, the TRNC is sort of like, oh, yes, this is what I like, you know. So having lived in the frenetic part of Dubai and you've come from South Africa and the UK. So I find it interesting that, you know, people tend to settle in the TRNC. And have you found a house, and have you bought or have you rented? How have you gone about it?
Yes, so we people may think we're a bit crazy for doing it this way, but we bought a property before we even saw the property. So, but we did have, which I know people are probably going, "Oh my goodness, why would you do that?" But
no,
but we did have. I mean, our estate agent is a friend anyway, and he's really, really great. And he did loads of videos for us. We had my brother and his other half had moved out by that stage, so they were just down the road. So they came up and they did some videos for us, and they said it is beautiful, you'll love it. So we kind of, you know, although yeah, we probably were a bit crazy for doing it, but we had people sort of helping us and coming to look at it and check on it and make sure everything was okay, and you know, sort of you do all the bits and bobs that you would do ordinarily anyway. But yeah, we bought the property out here. I think it was towards the end of, I think, well, if memory serves, probably around October, November time last year. And then yeah, we made the move out in December, and luckily we did fall in love with the house.
Well, I think we can all understand that. I mean, Rog came and bought his first property off plan, and then came back and told us all that he was going to move to North Cyprus, and we were like, whoa. And mine wasn't even built when I bought mine, so I think, you know, it's all right, we all understand.
Right, let's get to your first book, After Luke. Mm-hmm. Now, you wrote this during the pandemic, didn't you? Now, did you always have a burning ambition to write a book, or did you just feel like many of us, oh, I've got to do something because there's nowhere to go and nobody we're allowed to go and see? What was the process behind that first story?
Probably a bit of both, really. I mean, yeah, I've always wanted to write a book. I've always loved reading, so literally since I was a child. For as long as I can remember, I've always loved to read. So I've always had just loads and loads of books around the house. So, yeah, I've always just really, really wanted to. I've always loved the idea of writing a book, but it's one of those things where I think, you know, a lot of us go, well, I'll probably never get the chance to do it, or it's, you know, it's not something that I can do. It's not something I'm capable of doing. But yeah, obviously then lockdown happened, and I think it just gave me the time that I needed to do it, because that was, you know, sort of following after that. That was the problem that I had, was just the lack of time to do any more. But yeah, it just, at least lockdown came around, and you know, as I said before, as awful as it was, but at least for me personally, it gave me the time to write the book. But yeah, it was, like I said, I think it was a combination of things, really, because I sort of, as cliche as it sounds, but I had a dream one night, woke up the next morning, and just, yeah, just really felt inspired to do it, and just got cracking with it. And yeah, within, I can't remember. I think whenever I answer this question, I think it always changes, because I can't remember exactly how long it took me. But I think it was roughly about 5 months to write it. But I think, you know, if life had been normal, I don't think it would have taken. I think it would have taken much longer. I don't think it would have been that quick to do it. So, in that respect, I was grateful to have the time to actually do it. But yeah, it's been a lifelong dream since, yeah, probably since I was a child.
We'll obviously talk about the book itself, but I'm really interested. I thought you might have set your first book in Durban, you know, where you were brought up, or in Kent, where you went to live. But you actually set it in America, in North Carolina. What's all that about?
Well, I've always had I've got lots of passions, but one of my other loves is small town America, like films and books that are set in small town America. I don't even really know why. It's just got this real appeal for me. And I think it's the setting. It's such a beautiful setting. And it just, you know, perhaps it's from, again, growing up watching films, you know, when you're young, and you sort of get swept away in the romantics of it all, I guess. And yeah, I just really, really love, I love sort of all the little small towns. Not that we haven't been yet. Hopefully one day we'll make it out there. But yeah, I just love that kind of whole setting and the scene. And it's just really lovely. But hopefully one of the next ones will be either set in Durban or Kent, maybe.
Or the TRNC.
Yes, exactly.
So tell us about the story about After Luke.
It basically follows the main character Sophie's story, which is, it's very up and down. She's, you know, she's struggling with loss. she loses her husband very suddenly, and yeah, she then has to go back home for a number of reasons. And it's really just her story on sort of overcoming this deep, deep sorrow, you know, of losing her husband at such a young age, and just the trials and tribulations of sort of family life, and just finding her way again. So although it is a romance at its core, though it doesn't sound like it from what I've just said, but you know, she, without giving too much away, obviously, she yeah, she sort of just sort of finds her way again. But that's kind of the gist of
Yeah.
it.
So how do you write something like that? I mean, I obviously don't know you very well. So if have you experienced that sort of tragedy? I mean, how do you write something like that when perhaps you haven't experienced it?
I don't really know, to be honest. It just, I don't know if I got lucky with After Luke, because it just kind of, it almost wrote itself, I think. You know, although I had the initial kind of idea, and of course I do draw a little bit from my own experiences in my own life. And I think perhaps, you know, Sophie's kind of moving from, she moves from New York, from a big city, back to a small hometown in America, in North Carolina. And I think maybe the moving countries, or, you know, for me, obviously for her, it was different cities, but moving to a different place, I think that's kind of come into it slightly as well. And then where her dad has a heart attack in the book, my dad had a heart attack as well. So, I mean, it was many years ago and he's fine now, but I think I sort of draw on these little things that I've experienced in my life. So, yeah, it was kind of, it was a new experience, let's say, writing about her, you know, her heartbreak and her sorrow and things like that. But I think, you know, we've all been through heartbreak in our lives. We've all had our hearts broken at one point or another.
True,
So,
yes.
so I think you kind of, you know, that old saying, you write what you know, I think is very true. And I think you do draw on your own life experiences.
So you've now managed, I believe, to finish another two books. Are they similar insofar as, you know, you've got a, what should we say, a feisty leading lady and sort of a brooding alpha male somewhere lurking in the background? Are they similar like that?
In that sense, yeah, I think I have a go-to with my writing, and yeah, I do quite enjoy writing the kind of like feisty woman and you know, the alpha men, and yeah, I do quite like that sort of theme. But I mean, I think the next two, one of them again, where I kind of drawn my own experiences, when we came over, funny enough, to Northern Cyprus, I think it was about 2 years ago on holiday, my mom was rushed into hospital. And she had life-saving surgery. She was, yeah, it was a really, really, you know, scary time for all of us. And I'm really, really close with my mum as well. So it was very difficult. And so book two, I had already started book two by then, which I'll come back to in a minute. So after all of that happened with my mum, that kind of got put on the back burner slightly, because I just couldn't quite focus and I couldn't quite get back in the headspace, you know, in the right headspace for it. And then again, sort of inspiration struck, and I think perhaps for me, writing is almost like a therapy session where I kind of need to, you know, get everything out. And so, book three began, and it was sort of, again, you know, obviously with, you know, different tweaks, and it was different, but it kind of stemmed from what I went through with my mom. So book three is again about, you know, a girl whose mom is very, very unwell, and she's trying to support her, and she's, it's just, you know, it's a really, really difficult time for her. So I think I do tend to draw on my own personal experiences very much. And then, yeah, so I managed to finish book, which was technically book three at that stage, and then book, sorry, went back to book two, to finish that. And so book two was slightly different in the sense of it was more of a fantasy fiction, so slightly, you know, something slightly different, so although of course it's a romance as well, but it is just slightly different in that sense. So whether it works or not, we'll see, but hopefully it does work.
So, are books two and three already published?
No, so I've literally just, I think it was actually last week,
Oh.
I wrote the end on one of them. But I still, so they're kind of like, this is like the initial draft copies. So I still need to reread them, you know, make any changes, edit them, things like that. And then the whole process starts kind of again. So, you know, where I sort of either look at, I may look at self-publishing, I may look at going for a different publisher. There's sort of options that I need to figure out. But yeah, so I've still got a long way to go, but it's a nice feeling writing
I
the
bet. I bet. Yeah.
end.
And where can people, well, certainly where can people get After Luke? Because I know that's out already, obviously.
Yes, yeah. So After Luke is available on Amazon. The ebook, I believe, is worldwide. So if you're in America or, you know, anywhere, you can get the ebook. Paperback is also on Amazon for the UK. And then, yeah, if people want to contact me, you know, if anyone's over here, to contact me on social media, I'm on Instagram as author.kirrilee.delport. And obviously, I'm on Facebook as so Kirrilee Lee Delport was which I the name I wrote in. That's my maiden name. But I'm on Facebook as Kirrilee Lee Stout, which is now my married name. But yeah, people
Just
can contact.
spell that for us, if you would, your
Yes,
surname.
of course. So it's Stout. Everyone goes, oh, yeah, like the beer.
Well, yes, there we go.
So, I know another passion apart from writing you have is healing crystals. What on earth is all that about?
Yes, so I've got one currently in my hand.
Wow, it's like a duck
It
egg.
is, yeah. Healing crystals. So again, everything seems to have happened during lockdown, but I got into them during lockdown is kind of when it started. Although I do think it's only kind of now that I've sort of gotten into them and learnt more about them. I think I actually have been drawn to them again, probably from a very, very young age. You know, there's always certain things that we're drawn to as humans. You know, certain colors, certain sort of maybe textures, things like that. And I've now realized, looking back, that I think I was very, very drawn to turquoise from a very young age. But obviously, I didn't know what crystals were back then. Yeah. So recently, in the last couple of years, I've started. It just started as a you know just. Out of interest, really, just let's see what this is all about and let's get some crystals. And, you know, they make pretty jewelry and pretty necklaces and things. So I thought, yeah, let's give it a go. And it's just completely snowballed. It's one of those things that's just kind of come out of left field. And yeah, it's just taken up my absolute passion, really. But yeah, there's so many properties and you know, healing benefits and just so many good things that can stem from them, really. They're great for sleep and things like that. So again, you know, a lot of people were turning to them during lockdown for like there's moss agate, which is very good to boost the immune system as well. So again, during lockdown, lots of people were having moss agate. Lots of people were getting things like still bite for sleep. Yeah, there was just I think there was a real boom probably around lockdown because, like as you said earlier, Roger, you know, we weren't kind of leading our normal lives and everybody got to slow down and sort of really just take a step back, I think. So yeah, that's kind of how it all began, really.
Just explain then, because some people will think, well, I've got this bit of stone. How does that make me feel better? I mean, is it the energy they give out, the properties they have? How do you bring one to the other?
Yeah, so that's exactly it. So, because they are, as we are full of energy, or as we're, you know, made up of energy, so are the crystals. And because their energy is very, sort of neutral and just very sort of calming and soothing, but it's also very, you know, where ours can be quite erratic and our, sort of stress levels and, you know, our energies can go up and down. Whereas a crystals can remain, generally speaking, they kind of remain the same. You know, they're that very steady, calming, soothing, neutral energy. So when we then bring the crystal into our own energy field, it can have that effect on us, and it can then steady our own energies. So it has that calming effect. And you know, don't get me wrong. I think even I've been guilty of. You pick one up and you expect it to work miracles instantly. You expect to just instantly feel better. And that you know that they're not miracle workers, but they certainly help. I mean, I've felt just so many benefits from using them. It's outstanding, really. So yeah, I'm always trying to encourage people to try them out.
So I was going to ask, is this a personal thing? So you use healing crystals for your own benefit, or is this something you intend or do share with other people?
At the moment, yeah, so it's mainly kind of I've been using them for myself or kind of on myself and any family members who will let me. But the kind of longer term goal is to I'd like to get into crystal healing. So I'd like to, again, since moving out here and having a bit more time to do things and actually focus on the things that we're passionate about, I'd like to try and do some crystal workshops, and then eventually start getting into crystal healing as well. But yeah, I always try and promote them to other people and encourage other people to use them as well.
Are there any local crystals? I mean, have you found anything locally that you haven't seen before, or do you have to import them?
So there are some that come from Turkey, but because my collection is so big, I've actually brought them with from the UK. So although they were purchased in the UK, but yeah, I mean they come from all over the world, and yeah, there's quite a few that actually come from Turkey. But I think because I'm trying to sort of work through my own collection first, but it's good to know at least we can get some quite close by. But my UK supplier he's just phenomenal anyway, and he's just a fountain of knowledge. So anyone in the UK who is into crystals, sign up to the Crystal Den, because they are it's such a lovely community. He does a lot of master classes and sort of educationals and things like that as well. So he's just a fountain of knowledge. But yeah, he can hopefully ship some over to me as and when I need them as well.
So you've only been here a short while, as we discussed earlier, but how do you see your future? I mean, a lot of people we interview on this podcast, this is like their last port of call. They landed here, loved it like you do, and have got absolutely no inclination to leave. How do you see your future?
I think the beauty of it is it's just a sort of open at the moment. We don't know what the future holds, and in some respects it's quite invigorating, really. It's quite exciting, I think. We did something that, yeah, like as you said, a lot of people our age don't necessarily do. But we sort of, yeah, we had the opportunity to do it, and we thought, let's go for it. We've sort of said, we'll come out and try it out, give ourselves a year or two out here and see if we like it. So far, so good. We do so far. And yeah, we'll see what the future holds. But who knows? I think, having moved, as we've said, from South Africa to the UK, now to here, I think I don't know, I think I'm quite a free spirit, really. And whatever may come will come. But yeah, I mean, so far, I think the difference out here is just, as we've said, that kind of different pace of life. It's just slower, and you literally do stuff and smell the roses. It's just so much more relaxed. And don't get me wrong, of course, as we've said already, there's pros and cons to every country, and I'm sure there'll be things in the future where it's a bit frustrating with certain things, or we'll come up against things. But you have that anywhere you go in the world. There's always certain things. So yeah, I mean, it's going to take a little bit of time, I think, for us to realize what we want to do, or what the future may bring. But at the moment, as it stands, the kind of goal would be for me to carry on with the writing. I'd love to, just keep writing and keep getting more books out into the world. And obviously the crystals as well. I'd love to focus on that. And what better place to do it? We've got lovely sunshine and beautiful weather, and I'd love to get into sort of outdoor, whether it's outdoor crystal healing or outdoor yoga and things like that, yoga on the beach and things like that. So who knows? I think the options are endless, possibilities are endless. So yeah.
So that was the delightful Kerry Lee Delport speaking to us earlier this week. What a lovely, positive lady. It's so nice to, hear that positivity. I know we talk about inflation and the dust and all those sorts of things, and things that sort of little daily things that niggle. But for a young couple, her and her husband, to want to come and settle out in North Cyprus and see the possibilities of being out in North Cyprus, it's heartwarming, I think is the word.
Yes, indeed. And I know what whilst we were talking to her, it was really uplifting, as you say, just to hear all these plus points, even acknowledging, yeah, anywhere you live in the world, there's going to be niggles. The niggles are far outweighed, I reckon, over here, if you're fortunate enough to be, a British or indeed South African expat. It's still relatively cheap compared to most places in the world. And I reckon our climate, dust excluded, is as good as anywhere you'll find in the
Yeah,
world.
absolutely. Something I do want to do be before we shut, if I may, I'd like to give a shout out to Sarah Halls from Facebook. She's a regular listener to the podcast, And I saw it in a post because our American friend, Aubrey Beckham, who you interviewed, and you can hear on the North American one, she went to Çelebi Garden in Memecek and said how lovely it was. And she posted on Facebook about how lovely being at Çelebi Garden while she stayed overnight, had a lovely meal. And if you want to hear more about Çelebi Garden, just look up the boutique hotel one. Anyway, Sarah Hawes lives in Faversham in Kent. And under that poem, she said that she'd heard Buse Çelebi being interviewed by us and said it was a really good listen. So I posted the little link to the boutique hotel one. And Sarah just said that she's a regular listener. She loves the people and information we find and the questions we ask. So I just wanted to say thank you very much to Sarah. That's very kind of her to be nice about us, but also to sort of signpost somebody else to our podcast. Just to say that feedback is always very welcome. We'd love to hear from people, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter. We do have an email address as well, which is trnc.podcast@gmail.com. So thank you very much indeed to Sarah, and we look forward to hearing from other people.
Alan, we're going to hear from other people. In fact, about 15 minutes after the recording of this podcast, I'm being paid a visit by a couple, Goulet and Jay Uzum. Now, the names don't mean anything to you. People that have visited the TRNC or live here over the past year will have heard about an amazing cycle ride for charity that two policemen, and Jay is one of them, took. They cycled from London to the TRNC in a month to raise money for Tanyel Smile Foundation. It comes from a great tragedy because Tanyel was their daughter who was taken far, far too early after suffering cancer. And the story is amazing because while she was in remission, Tanyel was here in the TRNC and she noticed how difficult it was for cancer patients over here compared to where she was being treated at the Royal Marsden in the UK. So they've agreed to tell me their story. And as I say, they should be arriving here in around 15 minutes. And they've come right the way from Lefke on the West Coast. So they've come right, you know, out of their way to say hi to us. So we'll look forward to hearing from them in around 2 weeks' time.
That's fantastic. Well, it's one of those stories that you probably need a box of tissues to hand because it sounds uplifting in one wet sense, but obviously very sad in another. So thank you for doing that. And yes, we look forward very much indeed to hearing from them in our next podcast. But in the meantime, if you do want to get in touch in any way, then we'd love to hear from you. As I said a little bit earlier on, we are on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Talking Round North Cyprus. You can always comment as well wherever you hear our podcast. There is a link on there to comment if you want to. So thank you very much again for listening. I'm Sarah Palmer.
And I'm Roger Barr. Let's do this again very, very shortly.